The Asian Classics Institute presents A Guide to the Bodhisattva Way of Life, Part 3, with Geshe Michael Roach. Recorded live in New York City in October of 1997. This is the beginning of Class 8.
If I don't teach a nice class, they're going to turn on the electricity. Okay. We have a little bit left over from last week. Everyone was asleep, so I decided to cut it short. And there's one thing we didn't finish. And I'll go there. Let me see here. This is... Gyaltsep J, when he gets to proving the emptiness of the parts of the mind. What are the parts of the mind, by the way? If you treat the mind as static, it's the mental functions, like 46 or 52, depending on what school you're in. But nobody's been treating them static since the last class, since the last course, actually. They've been treating them like a rosary. Meaning what? A string of moments of consciousness. Like right now, you're having a moment of consciousness. Most of you, okay? All right. And then you can treat them the same as atoms. I mean, they don't really exist, okay? They are not the smallest part of your mind. You can split those into two, and it's just more raw data, and you can split each of those into two, and that's more raw data, and you will never find anything. Okay, what appears to be to you a self-existent present moment of your awareness is really just another projection onto some parts. Okay, what are the parts? The beginning, the duration, and the end of this moment that you're having right now. Okay, and your mind is projecting onto that my awareness. Okay, so it too is forced on you by your past karma. Okay, when you get to be an arhat and you destroy your mental afflictions, your past karma is forcing you to see your mind as totally free of any more mental afflictions. Really nice. When you get even better karma, that's forcing you to see all these moments of consciousness as omniscience. Okay? It's another projection, as much as the boss. Okay? Not different. The boss is physical, it's easier to deal with. The mind is a little bit harder to be aware of, and it's a little harder to deal with, but the principle is exactly the same. Okay? The boss is a bunch of red, oval, square, white, long, wagging, red thing. And your mind is interpreting it as a yelling boss, because you collected bad karma in the past. You probably yelled back at your boss at some point. Okay? And it's the same with your mind. You know, if you experience your mind like I do, sometimes nice, sometimes bad, sometimes pure, sometimes not so pure, It's because your karma of experience in your own mind and the projections on your own mind are coming from a mixed karma, you know, negative and positive karma. And the idea is that eventually you clean out all the negative ones, okay? Gyaltab Jay says, you can use that old analysis that you find in Aryanagarjuna's classic root wisdom, okay? Mula Prajna. And here it is. It's called Shingde Chepa. This is from last week, so I'm going to go kind of fast on it. You might have noticed that you couldn't do your homework till you had this. Say Shingde Chepa Dun. Shingde Chepa Dun. Shingda means, Shing means wood, Da means horse. Wooden horse is a wagon, a cart, okay? A wagon, like four wheels and all that. You can say a car. I mean, when Buddhism spreads in America, we're going to be using a car, okay? Seriously, no reason to use a wagon when you got a car, okay? Shingda means a car. Jepa means analysis. And Dun means seven-step analysis of the car. Aryanagarjuna, followed by Master Chandrakirti, followed by the great commentators from India, followed by Jetsun Kapa, followed by the greatest commentators in Tibet who came from Serame Monastery, all used the seven-part analysis of the car. Okay, and I'm going to give it to you real fast, because Gyaltsab Jay says at this point, if you want to understand the emptiness of the parts of your mind, then use the cart, use the wagon, use that analysis that Nagarjuna gave, Aryanagarjuna, okay? And here are the seven parts. You can just write the first one. Yo. Okay. Say tenyi.
Dang.
Tenyi. Dang. Tenyi means, by the way, the whole examination is, what is the relationship of the mind to those moments of consciousness, meaning its parts? What is the relationship of the car to the parts of the car? Okay? And that's what we're looking at. That's what we're trying to find. Gyaltsab Jay doesn't tell you what the seven are. They're kind of hard to find, actually, unless you have a computer with lots of pages of stuff on it. And then you can find them in some ancient commentaries. But the first one, analysis, by the way, this is all premised on self-existence. Can you find the mind in self-existent moments of consciousness? Okay? How many self-existent moments of consciousness in a finger snap? Trick question, okay? None, because there's no such thing. It's a two-headed, purple, full-sized elephant hiding somewhere in this room. It never existed anyway, okay? So the whole analysis is based on things that never existed anyway. Now, got it? Okay, here we go. Is the car its self-existent parts? You know, is the car equal to its parts individually? Is the car its wheel? Is the car its hood? Is the car its steering wheel? Is the car its windshield? No. Okay? If it were, there would have to be as many cars as there are parts. So that one you don't even need to say self-existent, right? I mean, that one's silly by itself. That one's silly whether you say self-existent or not. Obviously, the car is not its individual parts individually. Okay? If it were, then there'd be a whole lot of cars, because there's many parts. Okay, so that one we can cross out. By the way, if we cross out all seven, then the car is not self-existing. Okay? So we're one down, six to go. Alright? Denyi means that itself, meaning the parts themselves. Denyi means it, those themselves. How's that? Denyi means the parts themselves. Alright? And then you understand individually. Okay, individually. So number, by the way, Denyi is, I'm using the words by Nagarjuna himself in his root text. That's why I'm using these short words. If you glue them all together, you get Nagarjuna's root text, and it's a blessing to hear it. Okay, so Denyi Dung means the parts themselves individually. Okay, and it's not, or else there would be like 700 cars there. Okay, so number one is down. Check. Wait. Say Shenyi
Dang.
Shenyi
Dang.
Shenyi means something other than the parts. Okay? Something independent of the parts. Okay? Is there a car that's totally unrelated to the parts. No. Why? That would be like the idea of a soul. You know, that would be like the idea that there's some Michael Roach who's not Michael Roach's mind and not Michael Roach's body. There's a some Michael Roach, somehow they're driving or in charge of Michael Roach's body and Michael Roach's mind, okay? Like he exists like a diamond, crystal, unchanging, eternal soul outside of the body and the mind, you know? And this is like this, I grew up with this idea. When I was taught the word soul when I was a kid, that was how I visualized it. And I think that's what, this is what they're addressing. Is there this car that's independent of the parts? Is there a mind that's somehow beyond all your moments of consciousness? And the answer is obviously no. Why? If there was such a mind, it would be unchanging. You see? It wouldn't have the nature of the parts at all. It would be divorced from the parts. And it would be out there, car. You know? And it wouldn't have to have a flat tire. Because it's not the tire. It's not related to the tire. It doesn't matter whether the tire is flat or full. Car is there. You see what I mean? Take away two wheels, car is still there. You know, it's the idea of a soul, and you have to reject it. Okay? There is no mind separate and somehow beyond the moments of consciousness. Okay? There's no such thing. Scratch number two. That was easy. It just means that if there's a mind that... If the mind is not related to the parts, you have a big problem, right? Like you couldn't change your mind. Okay? Seriously. Okay? That's the whole point. There'd have to be some big mind out there that had a different address than your mind. You know? Because it's not related to all the parts of your consciousness. It's just not a good idea, okay? It's not very profound. Okay. The main problem with number two is that the mind would have to be unchanging, and it's not. Somebody has to find us a really nice place to have class, okay, for the spring. Seriously. All right? Go around the East Village. Find. I love a big church with stained glass windows and a big floor, wooden floor, with no pews. Okay? I don't care if it's falling apart. All right? Seriously. Reasonable rent. Okay? Go find one. All right? I think those white pews just don't make it, you know. I don't know. Okay, say ten, dang, tembe, chokdang. Ten, dang, tembe, chokdang. Okay, here Aryanagarjuna covers two more possibilities. Does the car depend on its parts? Okay, does the car depend on its parts? Here you have to understand something, that if two objects, this is plain old Buddhist philosophy, like the kind of thing you're going to get in the spring, okay? Just, these are the basic things that every young monk learns when he's 12 years old. You know, the nature of a relationship, there are two possible relationships in the universe. This one is tendan temba. You would have a table, and on top of the table you'd have a pen, okay? This is called the relationship of something supported and something supported it. You know, is the car supported by the parts? Is it resting upon the parts? Okay? If I say it that way, you see it's kind of silly because there'd have to be a car that was separate from the parts. You see what I mean? You have the same problem that you just had with number two. Okay? If I say the car is supported by the parts or depends on the parts, then the car and the parts have to be separate things. Because any time in philosophy at all that you have a relationship between two things, they have to be separate. They have to be distinct from each other. And here you have the table and the pen resting on the table. That's a support, that's a relationship of something supporting something else. Okay? Dependence implies the existence of two separate objects. The car cannot be independence on its parts, because then the car is separate from the parts. You see what I mean? When you say the kid depends on the parents for money, the kid must be separate from the parents to depend. You see, if they were one thing, you couldn't speak of dependence. Okay? Scratch number three.
How does that differ from a label that's imposed on?
We'll talk about it. We'll get there. We'll get it. We're going to get there. Not the same thing. The label is not the thing. The thought is not the thing. The little thing that had the lights coming off it was not the thing. It was the sum of, it was one of the parts that had to be there. Right? Okay. Okay. Dan Dong. Demba. Demba number four means, oh, we scratched number three. I'm going through kind of quick because it's easier. Okay. Oh, Vichara, I know you're going to debate me. Come on. What? Oh, you could say the mind is not supported by its parts. Okay, number three is the mind is not supported by its parts. Does the mind support its parts? I mean, is it? Can you reverse it? Let's say this is the parts of the mind, which is the moments of consciousness, and this is the mind. Is that their relationship? No. Why? Because they'd be two separate things. And we already proved that can't be. Okay. If they were two separate things, then what relationship would they have? You see what I mean? Then if you took away the parts, would the car still be there? Yes. Why? They're two separate things. One is depending on the other. Okay? What if you reverse it, okay? Put the car under here, put the parts on here. Is that the nature of the car to its parts? Do the parts depend on the car? No. Not if the car is self-existent. Okay? You gotta get that. These are all talking self-existent. That's the trick. You'll understand it more when we do the other example tonight. Anyway, if the car were supporting its parts instead of the parts supporting the car, which is impossible, then that's impossible for the same reason. That's impossible for the same reason. Because then they would be two separate, unrelated things. Okay? They would be two separate things. When you talk about relationship, you're talking about two separate things. What's the relationship between this guy and his wife? They're different things. You can't say, what's the relationship between Sky and his wife's husband? You see? Because they're the same thing. When you talk relationship, you have to talk separate things. Okay? And there's no two separate things between the parts and its car. Okay? Yeah. I know what you mean, but in that case you're using, when you say you're independent, you know, like you're self-supporting, you're using you in two different senses at the same time. You see what I mean? You're actually talking about the you in the past who sets up causes for the you in the future to have enough to eat and stuff like that. You're talking about two different yous. Okay. Okay, let's go on. Yeah, by the way, remember here we're talking about a self-existent you. Now what does that mean? We'll talk about it. Okay? It means a pen, which could be a pen from its own side. We went through it many times. Okay? A pen, which could be a pen from its own side, without you thinking of it as a pen. But all you really see is colors and shapes. All I'm really holding up is blue, white, cylinder. Okay? If it's a pen, it's because you're a human being who's seen one used before and your karma is forcing you to see this as a pen. If your dog walks in here and sees the same blue white cylinder, they see what? Something to chew. A chewable object. Who's right? They're both right. It just depends what kind of frame of mind you're approaching this cylinder with. Okay? But what about the cylinder itself? Same story. We talked about it. Same story. This is all assuming, this debate of Nagarjuna here, Arya Nagarjuna, is talking about a pen that was a pen from its own side. Is there such a pen? Is there a two-headed, purple, full-sized elephant rampaging in this room? No, okay? It never was, it never will be, I mean, hopefully. Okay, so okay, it can't be, you know. What he's examining the existence of a car that exists from its own side. See what I mean? That kind of car can't depend on its parts, and that kind of car can't support its parts, because that kind of car never existed anyway. Okay, and you have to get used to that. We'll do it in more detail with the lesson tonight. Anyway, Nagarjuna says, Arya Nagarjuna says, the car does not depend on its parts because a self-existent car that depended on its parts would be separate from its parts. And the car doesn't, and the parts don't depend upon the car because parts that depended upon a self-existent car would also be totally separate from the car. In the way that sky is separate from his wife. Because to enjoy a relationship, two things have to be separate. Two separate things. If the whole were totally separate from the parts, it'd be weird. You could take the parts away and the whole would still be there. You see what I mean? If you took the wheel and the chassis and the windshield away, the whole would be there. If the whole depended upon the parts, then they would have to be separate guys. And when you took away all the parts, the whole would be still sitting there. But that's not possible. Okay? Yeah.
For something?
Yeah. I'm going to get to that just after this, okay? If I don't, get back to me. Okay. The thing to remember there is that for two things to have a relationship, they have to be separate things. Okay? All right. Now, the second example there was, do the parts depend on the car? Number three was, does the car depend upon its parts? Self-existently, please. Number four was, do the parts depend upon the car? Self-existently, please. Okay. What does the self-existently mean? We're going to get more into it tonight. Number five. By the way, I'll do it one more time. I was trying to get away with doing it fast, but let's not do that. Okay, here we go. Look at this cylinder of blue and white. Now think pen about it. I mean, first pretend you're neither a dog or a human. You're like some neutral being who only sees a blue and white cylinder. Okay. Now pretend you're a human and you see it as a pen. You think of it as a pen. But you can turn off the thought of it as a pen. Turn it off now and think of it as a blue and white cylinder. Now turn on seeing it as a pen. Now turn off seeing it as a pen. Now turn off seeing it as a pen. Just see it as a blue and white cylinder. And I'm going to ask you a question. Is the pen the blue or is the pen the white? It's a stupid question. Cross out number one, okay? That was number one, okay? That was Ding Yi Dong. That was number one, okay? Ready for number two? Ready for number two? Okay. Don't think of this as a pen. It's just a bunch of parts. It's just a blue and white cylinder. Ready? Where's the pen? Where's the pen before you thought of it as a pen? Where's the pen? I mean, is it something else than the parts? I mean, if I took all the parts away, if I threw this out in the street, Rutherford Place, you know, and said, where's the pen? You'd say, well, what are you talking about? There wasn't a pen to start with yet because I didn't think of it as a pen yet because for all I know, it was a chewable thing. Okay? I didn't think of it as a pen yet. Independent of my projections, it's neither its parts individually nor something divorced from its parts. Okay? You get the flavor of it? Okay? All right. Let's go to number five. You know the rest. Say Denbei Chok.
Denbei Chok.
Denbei Chok. Denbei Chok means, by the way, this is root text. Denbei Chok means, does the pen possess its parts? Does the self-existent pen possess its parts? Denba means possess. Does a self-existent car possess its parts? Okay. Let's do it again. Look at it as a blue and white cylinder. Do not think pen. Pretend you're like a neutral being. You're not a dog and you're not a human. Dog is vehemently saying it's a two-able thing, self-existently. Human is saying vehemently, no, no, you're all wrong. It's a pen. Probably they'll have a World War III over it. Okay? That's what humans do. Okay? All right? Pretend you're like neutral third party, you know, Geneva, something. And you just see it's just a bunch of parts, okay? Does the pen possess those parts? It's a stupid question. There's no pen yet. You're saying self-existent pen. You're siding with the humans. I thought you were neutral. Okay? All right? Got it? There is no self-existent pen that has any parts. Scratch number 5. We'll go back to number 1, okay? Say Dupatsam. Okay, back to number 1. Look at a blue and white cylinder. Focus on the blue and the white as two separate things. You're not thinking of it as a pen yet. You are neutral. You're not siding with the humans or with the dogs, okay? Just looking at colors. Is the pen the blue? No. There's nothing penned there yet until I go over to the human side. Okay? Is the pen the white? No. Because you're already saying pen. Whose side are you on anyway? You gotta be fair to animals. Alright? It's not a pen until you think of it as a pen. Something missing, which is you're thinking of it as a pen. If you strip away thinking of it as a pen, there's nothing pen about it. And when I ask you, is the white by itself the pen? You say, huh, what pen? And if I say, is the blue itself the pen? You say, huh, what pen? And if I say, Dupatsam, number 6, are the blue and the white together that pen? You're supposed to say, what pen? Because we didn't think of it as a pen yet. I'm saying before you think of it as a pen, before you decide to be on the dog side or the human side, if you're just coming in, and you're from Mars, and you can see that it's a blue and white cylinder, but you don't know what it's for, you wouldn't think of it as pen. Okay. Independent of your thinking of it as pen, are the blue and the white together the pen? No. Why? It's a stupid question. All it is so far is colors. It's just raw data. I didn't think of it as anything yet. Okay. A self-existent pen would be pen from its own side, and it wouldn't have to wait for me to think of it as a pen. And then every critter that came in here, dog, horse, roach, would see, pen, magic marker, great, I can use that. Okay, but they don't. Okay, there's an element missing. So if I say, is the collection of the parts, Dupatsam, the pen, you're supposed to say, no way. And I say, why? And you say, what pen? And I say, the pen I see here in my hand. And you say, oh, you're already being prejudiced. You're already on the human side. You're already thinking of it as a pen. We're talking independent of your projections, independent of thinking of it as a pen. Is the sum of the parts the pen? And I say, no. Okay. Why? There's one part missing. What? Thinking of it as a pen. Okay. As long as thinking of it as a pen is not there, you cannot say the sum of the remaining parts is the whole. Okay? It's not. Okay? Stop thinking of it as a pen. You're being prejudiced. Okay? I'm saying again, am I?
Because you say each time, it's like saying, the way I hear it, it's not self-existent because it's not self-existent.
I think you're saying, but you started out calling it a pen, so you're kind of begging the question like that. You mean because I started out calling it, we're examining the pen.
No, okay? I mean, each reasoning you say, there's no pen there.
No, I'll tell you why. Because the other school, the non-Buddhists, are saying that whether or not you think of it as a pen, it's a pen. That's who we're fighting with in chapter 9. We're fighting with non-Buddhist schools and even some Buddhist schools that would say it has a nature of being pen from its own side. before I think of it as a pen. It is a pen. It is a pen. Okay? They say that. Okay? And it's not true. What's it got to do with my life? Who cares if it's a pen from its own side or not? I can still write with it. That's true. But this pen will run out. And the hand holding it will die because of certain projections I'm having. I can change those projections. If that pen existed from its own side, and if the arm holding it existed from its own side, I have to die. And there's no point to studying Buddhism. Okay? If the pen is not self-existent, if the pen is a projection, and if the arm, the nature of this arm, is a projection, then I can change things. Then I can become a tantric deity, if I collect the right kind of karma. Okay? The whole thing is in the potential. Emptiness creates the potential for anything. If it was a pen from its own side, I'm in trouble. That's why we're going through this apparently silly analysis. It's deadly important, deadly serious, life or death for each of us. Okay? It really is. If you can establish that the pen doesn't exist from its own side, then we have a chance. If it is a pen from its own side, you might as well go to drink some beers, you know. You only have one life to live. Live it up. Seriously. You know, it's an option. Okay. So dupatsan means, is it the collection of its parts? Is the pen the collection of its parts? Which pen? The pen out there that exists on its own. Independent of my thinking of it as a pen. But there's no such pen. Yeah, I know, I'm just asking you a trick question. Is the pen that doesn't exist a collection of its parts? No, stupid. Okay, scratch six. Dipatsan means the sum of the parts. Independent of my projections. Okay. We're always assuming independent. Okay. You'll get it better when I go to the class for tonight. Yipki Nampa. I'm gonna cut it here, okay? Cut it right here. You know what? Cut it right here. Sorry. I'll make it. No, I'll just make it easier for you. The rest belongs with the whole and not the parts. Okay. Just yip, okay? Yip. Yip. Sorry. Yip. By the way, those of you who want to know how to pronounce Tibetan, it is a high tone, strong tau wa yata ya. Yip. Okay. Yip means yip means the outline, okay? There was a non-Buddhist school that said the outline is the pen, you know? That the pen has a special configuration, that the sum of the parts has a certain look to it, which is the pen. Okay? What is the pen that configuration, you know, that car? You know, is the car the, you know, if you have a Corvette, you know, if you have a Porsche, you know, what's his name? Saab. Who is that? Chilton. You know. You know, I mean, is it the configuration? You see, I mean, is it the general outline? There was a non-Buddhist school that said that. And number seven, Nagarjuna takes the time to say, come on. You know, like, sorry. It works well, I know. is the pen its general outline? You know, is it some special configuration or outline of the thing? Yip means outline in this case. And it's not. Okay. Not before I think of it as a pen. Okay. And that's all. Those are the seven. You'll never find them in scripture. They mention them all the time. And I just thought it'd be cool to go through them. The bottom line is this. If the pen, if you treat the pen without your conception of a pen, if you think there's some pen out there on its own, from its own side, before your karma forces you to see it as a pen, then all sorts of crazy things can happen. The fact is, there is no such thing. The fact is that the only thing there, if you want to call it that, is raw data, is some blue and white cylinder. Okay? And then what you see depends on who you are. You know, if you're a dog, you come in and see a blue and white chewable object. If you're a human, you come in and see a blue and white writing instrument. If you're a tantric deity, you come in and see a blue and white ecstasy stick. You know, I mean, it just creates ecstasy in you. You don't even care what it's used for. You see what I mean? Seriously. A magic wand, if you want. Okay? And each of those beings would validly, reasonably, see one of those things. No problem. Which would you rather be? You see, that's all. Okay. You examined the pen in seven ways to assure yourself that if the pen were out there, everything would be screwy. All those things are impossible. It could not be the sum of its parts. It could not be the individual parts. It could not have its parts. It could not depend on its parts. Its parts couldn't depend on it. Nothing could go right if the pen existed out there on its own. Okay. You have to get used to it. That's the examination, the examination of the, sometimes they call it the examination of the chariot or the wagon. Like that. Yeah. Oh, why did we even talk about it? It was because Geltab Jay dismissed the whole idea of the mind itself being self-existent. Remember, we finished examining the self-existence of Michael Roach. Now we're discussing the self-existence of his parts, which are body and mind. And we rejected body easily, and then we went on to mind. And Geltab Jay, all he did was he left you hanging. He says, use those seven examinations for the mind. Bye. And he never mentions what they are. If you'll see in the reading tonight. So I thought you might like to see them. This is straight from Arya Nagarjuna. Apparently, in 1402, everybody knew. Okay? But we don't. And I thought it was... You always hear this analysis of the wagon or the chariot, and you never get to see it. And that's it. And you have to understand that they're talking about... If you just get that, they're talking about a pen that was a pen from its own side, and there ain't no such thing. So none of those things can be possible. By the way, one of them is true. Which one? Maybe a couple of them, actually. Which ones are true conventionally, if we're talking about projections? Well, it is the sum of its parts, if you include the part called its projection. It does depend on its parts, if you include as one of the parts the projection. It does possess its parts, if you include among its parts, the projection. And some of them are okay if you're not talking about a pen that exists out there from its own side. Okay? You got to get used to that. You cannot even imagine what it means when I say a pen that exists from its own side, because you've been assuming that the pen was that way all along. And that's why humans and dogs have fights. And that's why you fight with your friends about what's good music and what's not good music. Okay, because to you it seems self-existently good music from its own side, and you believe it, and then you collect bad karma, and then you have to listen to bad music. Not Neil Young's first album. Okay, we'll go on. Seriously, I mean, that creates all your suffering, believing in self-existence. Okay, now we can actually get to the class. Master Shantideva at this point, now we're on to today's class, okay, starts to discuss. There are five beautiful proofs of emptiness. Okay, they appear in Madhyamika literature. Their roots are found in Nagarjuna, Arya Nagarjuna, and they're carried on by Chandrakirti. Yeah?
Did we do all four of the deep awarenesses?
No, we have not. Okay, we have not done them all yet. Yeah, yeah. It's a very good question. Okay. So there are five very beautiful proofs found in Madhyamika literature for proving emptiness. And when they get to this, they always say, is that all there is? And they say, no, they're endless. They're countless ways to prove emptiness. But these are the big five. Okay, these are the big five. And they start out with a proof called... John says this will be easier on your eyes. Is it? Sorry. Not self-existently? Only for some people? Oh, I don't mind. Say Dorje? Neatest thing. Do means stone, Je means king or lord, like Je Tongkhapa. Okay? So Dorje is the king of stones or the diamond. Okay. Sekma means, it's a very hard word to translate. I've translated it as a sliver of diamond, a tiny piece of diamond. like there is not any other object in the universe which can scratch a diamond, period. There's nothing. Nothing in the universe can scratch a diamond. But you can put a diamond on the ground and hit it a certain way and it will shatter into thousands of pieces, okay? If you've ever been a diamond cutter, you know this from experience. You go to your client and say, you remember that 20 carat piece of rock you gave me, you know? It's a Dorje Segma, you know? Okay. Sometimes you hit a knot in a pressure point and it just shatters inside. When the diamond's being cut, which it can only be cut by another diamond, it gets red hot. It's actually glowing red. And then it just hits a flaw and it just blows up like that. And then you have to go explain to the client. Anyway, Dorje Segma means a sliver of diamond like that, a tiny slice of diamond. For example, it's used in froth of the ocean wave when it blows up, hits the shore, and there's these splatters of froth. Those are each called Segma. So Segma means like that. It's a rare word. Densig means the proof of emptiness here. Densig means a proof, a logical proof, a syllogism, okay? A proof. Ma just makes it feminine, which is always wisdom, okay? A feminine sign, okay? Sekma means a sliver, but there's this sense of feminine and wisdom, okay? So Dorje Segma Densig means the proof of emptiness called the sliver of diamond. Why is diamond important in Buddhism? Why does it come so often? Why, for example, is the diamond cutter called the diamond cutter, although the word diamond doesn't ever appear in it? Okay. The day that you see emptiness directly, which we said at the beginning of this class, if as a result of this class you could see emptiness directly for 20 minutes, you would be on your way out of suffering. Within a limited time span, you would become enlightened. And you cannot say that of anyone until they have seen emptiness directly. If someone has not yet seen emptiness directly, and you ask a Buddha, you know, how long is it going to be? He has to say, I don't know. We don't know yet. But the minute you see emptiness directly, the nature of ultimate truth is that it begins to change your being drastically. And now you have the ability to become enlightened, and you will be. And you see your future enlightenment. After you come down out of the direct perception of emptiness, you see your future enlightenment. That's the whole goal of this class, the whole goal of all these courses. If one person of all the people who ever come here, or whoever takes these correspondence courses and things like that, if one person could see it directly, it would be worth all the effort of everyone here, if one person could see it. Hearing about it over and over again, seeing it proven many, many different ways, is the beginning of seeing it directly. Along with that, you must be meditating deeply, practicing meditation every day, 1 or 2 hours a day, every day. And along with that, you must be collecting very, very heavy-duty good karma. For example, by helping other people understand emptiness. Okay, but all those things, and serving the Dharma like that, but all those things have to come together for you to see emptiness directly. The day you see it, you see that it is very similar to a diamond. Okay. Or I should say that a diamond is similar to it. Why? In the physical world, in your reality as it stands now, there are no ultimates. You can't say, this person is ultimately nice. You can't say, this is the tallest thing in the universe. You can't say, this is the smallest thing in the universe. You can't say, this is the hardest thing in the hottest thing in the universe. But there is a hardest thing in the universe, and that's a diamond. There is nothing in the universe which can scratch a diamond except another diamond. Diamonds have soft grains and hard grains like pieces of wood. Along its hard grain, there's no substance in the universe which can scratch a diamond. It is close to the idea of ultimate. And there is no other object in your reality. If a Buddha was trying, or if an Arya was trying to explain to you emptiness, what they had just seen, all they could say was, think about diamond. You know, just think about diamond. It's an experience of all Aryas when they come down out of that, that they are obsessed with diamonds. Okay, it's an experience. And that's why you see diamond throughout Buddhist literature. Dorje here means diamond, in the sense of the closest thing that an Arya could talk to you about to describe emptiness as an ultimate. Okay, it is an ultimate, it is a higher reality. It's way beyond this reality. It's so ultimate that if you saw it directly for 20 minutes, it could eventually stop every kind of suffering you have. And that's why you're here. Okay, that's its quality. And that's the closest that an Arya could come to telling you about it. And a new Arya, a baby Arya, would want to be around diamonds all the time to remember what they saw. You know, they would purposely set up some kind of way to be near diamonds. Okay, that's the meaning of diamonds. Sekhma means that every object in this room has its own emptiness. Every person here has their own emptiness. Every part of everything here has its own emptiness. The emptiness of each thing in this room is totally equal. Okay? It's total, pure, 100% unadulterated, ultimate reality. Okay? It is attached to a different basis, but its quality is pure, total, 100% unadulterated lack of self-existence. And in that sense, every emptiness in this room, and there are as many emptinesses in this room as there are objects in this room and pieces of objects in this room, each one of them is pure, 100% emptiness. And when you see emptiness directly for the first time, you are seeing exactly the same emptiness that an enlightened being sees all the time. The emptiness that you are aware of and your experience of that emptiness directly is exactly the same as the emptiness that an enlightened being sees all the time, and your awareness of it is total. It's not like you have half of their realization of emptiness or three quarters or something like that. Your understanding, your direct communion with emptiness is as pure and as ultimate as that of an enlightened being. So in that sense, all the emptinesses in this room are totally the same. If you take a diamond and smash it, each sekhma, each tiny piece, is absolute, pure, total diamond. And so Dodje Sekhma is a very important meaning in Buddhism. Okay, it means each emptiness in the universe is total, pure, absolute reality. In the same way that if you smash the diamond, each piece... Diamond is, by the way, chemically perfect. Perfect carbon. It's the same carbon as in a pencil lead. But the one in a pencil lead is not arranged well along this axis. So when you write, it shaves off. Pieces break off. When you write with a pencil, it's just lousy atomic structure along this plane. And so they slice off like slate. Pieces of slate falling off. But diamond, every possible configuration is a perfect bonding. There's no more perfect bonding. Every molecule of diamond is absolutely pure diamond. Pure. Absolutely pure diamond. Absolutely perfect configuration. Cannot be split by any other object in the universe. And emptiness is the same. So Dodje Sekhma is a really, really important word. It's not a mistake that they named this proof of emptiness Dodje Sekhma. Okay? It relates very importantly to your first perception of emptiness. Okay? Direct perception. Okay, anyway, what is the Dodje Sekhma Tensei? And let me see. That's it. And this is, again, from Nagarjuna. And I'm going to teach it to you from his words. I just think it's a blessing if you can get the story straight from the what they call the second Buddha. Okay. These are Nagarjuna's own words. We'll do it line by line. How's that? Then you won't get indigestion. Say, Dakle, Mayin, Shenle, Min. Okay, you may not have noticed it, but we finished proving the emptiness of your body and the emptiness of your mind. Okay? Those are easy. Alright? The emptiness of your body is easy. Why? It's standing still. Okay? Like, you can think of its parts the way they have those charts in the butcher shop, you know, rump roast, loin, ribs. You know what I mean? It's not like it's moving like a cow. It's like you gotta, you know, it's up there on the wall and it's stationary. It's staying there, okay? The emptiness of the parts of your body is easy because the parts are so easy. You know, arm is not that difficult. Hand is not that difficult. Mind is a little more subtle, but you are aware of this present moment. There is a moment of awareness right now, and it's not so hard to imagine that what we call your mind is the sum total of all those moments that have ever occurred in your life. We call those Leon. We call those Leon's mind. The sum total of all the present moments of consciousness, like what? Like the one you is having right now. Okay? So it's not so hard to imagine that as a part, and to imagine your mind as being made up of those parts over the length of your life. That's harder than your body, because it's kind of invisible. But it's not so hard if you're having a present moment of awareness, which I hope most people are. Okay? It's not that hard. Okay. Now we're getting into tricky territory. Okay. Nagarjuna is about to prove, by the way, well, he's going to prove the emptiness of causation itself. Why does one thing make another thing happen? Why does one thing make another thing happen? What's the emptiness of things making other things happen? When you hit a nail with a hammer, what's the emptiness of the nail going into the wood? Okay. What's the emptiness of the hammer blow causing the nail to go into the wood? What's the emptiness of going to work and getting money and then using it to buy food? Okay. Causation itself. Things that work. What's the emptiness of a taxi cab that takes you across town? The cause of getting across town is the cab. Okay. What is the emptiness of that? Is that also empty in the way your mind and your body are empty? Okay. That's more tricky. And it's much more important in my mind. Why do things work? Okay. You can call tonight's class, "Why Do Things Work?" Okay. Why is it when you present the guy with this green paper, they give you a Michael and Zoe strawberry protein shake? Okay. Why? Okay. Why is it when you spend 8 hours there, the guy gives you another paper with these zeros on it and a number in front of that, you know? Why is it that when you put a certain number of parts together, this thing turns and goes across town called a car? You know, why? You know, why is it that the sun comes up in the morning? Okay, why? You know, what's making it happen? Okay, and Arya Nagarjuna gives us four choices. Sometimes this is called a mushi, the reasoning based on four possible choices. The first choice is that dakle. Okay, choice number one. Things happen because they happen. Who made a pea round? This is a big debate in the non-Buddhist schools of India, the great non-Buddhists. Who made thorns sharp? Nobody. They're sharp from themselves. Come on. You know. Who made the sky blue? Nobody. Come on. Sky's blue. But that's the big one, you know. Who made thorns sharp? Who made needles sharp? Who made peas round? Peas is round. They're round themselves. Okay. It sounds stupid, right? It's like saying, who was it yesterday? You know, why were two people in a car accident and one of them died and one of them didn't? Oh, it just happened, Johnny. Don't ask anymore. You know what I mean? That's science's answer. Science is saying, dagle yin. Things come from them. Just random. It just happened. Okay? What caused it? Nothing caused it. It just happened. If you ask why he died, I can tell you. You know, there's a certain conchoidal fracture to the left temporal of the third part of the brain, you know, due to the windshield cutting in at that angle and like that. Yeah, I know that's why the windshield smashed his head. But why was he sitting on that side? And why did the car hit him on that side? And science says, Dakle yin. It just happened from itself. There's no explanation for that. I can tell you why his skull was crushed. There's no answer to the question, why was he sitting on the left? Okay. I mean, science would say it comes because it comes to that question. Okay. that question doesn't have an answer. We're very scientific till we get to that question. Okay? Everything has an answer. Everything has a cause. Except for the stuff that we can't figure out what its cause is. Okay? You see what I mean? We choose to ignore that one. Okay? That isn't an event. Yes. Do all events have causes? Probably. Does that event have a cause? No. It just happened. Okay? Well, why do you restrict yourself to explaining why half the stuff has causes and the other stuff you don't bother to explain? Because we can't figure it out, okay? Stop asking. Okay? We can't figure out why that guy was sitting on the left. We can't figure out why you were born into this crummy life. We can tell you how you're going to die. We can tell you which virus is going to kill you. We can't tell you why that virus, you got it at that day. We can't tell you that. It just happens. Dat Le Yin. Okay? Dat Le Yin. It comes from itself. It happens by itself. It's like the roundness of peas in ancient India. It's like the sharpness of a rose's thorn. Nobody made it that way. That's just the way they are. Okay? And the Gajna says, no thanks. I don't like it. Not true. Everything has a cause. Come on. Everything has a cause. You can't say something events have causes and some don't. You can't explain how the AIDS virus kills you and not explain why this guy got the AIDS virus and not somebody else. Okay? It doesn't make any sense. Okay? Things don't come from themselves. Things don't just happen. Okay? He rejects number one. Things don't just come from themselves. And in a way, that's the most important one for us to discuss, you see? We have to fill that in. I claim that Western civilization's viewpoint is incomplete and dysfunctional. Okay? Incomplete in that it doesn't answer those questions. Dysfunctional in that the questions it does answer don't help us. You know? We still die. Okay. It doesn't explain why I'm here and why I'm dying. Okay? It explains like a little stuff about my viruses and my proteins, you know, but it doesn't keep me from dying, and it doesn't even talk about that. Okay? Dat Le Yin. So Aryanagarjuna rejects that. He says, come on, things don't come from themselves. Okay? For one thing to cause another thing, they must be separate. Okay? For one thing to cause another thing, they must be separate things. Come on. Things don't just happen on their own. Something else has caused it to happen. Okay. And if you think about it, even though it sounds silly to say that a oak tree caused an oak tree, or that a full-grown corn sprout caused a full-grown corn sprout, that's what science is saying when they say, it just happened. Okay. It's exactly what they're saying. How about number two? Shen Le Yin. By the way, that Mayin there is no way. Nagarjuna says no way. Dak Le means it just happened. It just came by itself. Mayin means Aryanagarjuna is saying no. Things don't just happen by themselves. Something else comes along and makes them happen. Even the question of why did Mr. A die but Mr. B didn't die? Okay. There's a cause. There's a reason. Okay. Say, Shen Le Min. Shen Le Min. Shen means something else. Le means it comes from something else. Okay. When a nail sinks into a piece of wood, is it because of the action of some other thing? Of course. Called what? A hammer. Okay. When a hammer crosses empty space and hits the head of the nail, is that caused by something else? Yes. Your arm. Ask Andy Grace. Okay. When the arm moves from point A to point B, is that caused by something else? Yes. What? Movement here, you know, something like that. Is that caused by something else? Yes. Motivation. Is that caused by something else? Yes. Yesterday's mind. Is that caused by something? Everything is caused by something else. Of course, everything is caused by something else. Everything that does something does that because something else happened before that. That's the way things were. No problem, right? What causes a Michael and Zoe's strawberry protein shake to appear in your hand? You pay. Okay. What causes the money to appear in your pocket? You wait. You go to wait. Okay. What makes you go to work? Your mom and dad create your body. You know, what caused your mom and dad to create your body? Etc. Okay. Everything is caused by something else. And the Gajanist says, min. Say, Shenle min.
Min.
Min means no way. It's not. Aryanagarjuna is hallucinating. He's saying, they don't, things are not caused by other things. Things don't cause other things to happen. Donald Trump, were you in the class Friday? We redid the New York Times front page, according to karma, okay? No, we are fighting a worldview. We are fighting a thing called Western civilization's idea of the way things work, because it's incomplete and doesn't help us. Okay? You can find a complete one that will make you enter a permanent bliss, and that's a lot better. Okay? So what's the difference? Shen Le Min means it's not the money that got you the Michael and Zoe strawberry protein shake. It's not. That was not the cause of the shake, according to Buddhism. Period. It's not the cause of the shake. There's lots of people with money who can't get a shake. Okay? So it's not the cause of the shake. Most of the time you can get a shake if you have money. Right? If you go into Michael and Zoe's, and if you have enough money, you can usually get a shake. But I have to say usually why. Sometimes they'll be out of... you know, strawberries. Sometimes they'll be out of protein stuff, you know. Sometimes there'll be a long line and you don't have time before class to get one, okay? Get it, okay? This is profound. This overthrows all of Western civilization's viewpoints, and it also happens to get you to a Buddha paradise. A shake is not caused by money. Why? Hey, stupid, did you notice? It doesn't always cause a shake. If money was the cause of a shake, you would always get a shake if you had enough money. Seriously, I'm not kidding. It's so obvious you missed it for what, 30, 40 years. You continue to miss it and you continue to suffer and you will die unless you get what I'm saying right now. A shake ain't caused by the money. That's not why you get the shake. It's not why you get the shake. You're talking about self-existent money causing a self-existent shake, and there ain't no such thing. Why do you get a shake? Karma. You're forced to see yourself getting a shake. Why? Because you provided one to someone else. Period. Oh, come on. It's too easy. It's too simple. How can we live like that? We'd have to go around giving shakes to everybody. Yeah, right. And what would happen? You'd be in a Buddha paradise with all the strawberry shakes you want. Seriously. Seriously. If it was money that created a strawberry protein shake at Michael and Zoe's, then anyone who walked in there with enough money would get one. That's not the cost. Get it. Get it. You know, you have to get it. Your life depends on it. Your life depends on it. You can become a tantric deity. You can enter a Buddha paradise. You have to give up that wrong view. Self-existent money doesn't cause self-existent shakes. Okay? A shake is a projection onto some red, cold, wet. And if you want one, you better set up that projection. How? Give somebody something to drink. Okay? It always works. Get it? It always works. It's better than money. Money is defective. Money doesn't always work. Money's not the cause. Why? Because it doesn't always work, stupid. Okay? If it was the cause of the shake, you would always get a shake when you had money. That's not why you get the shake. But if you walk into Michael and Zoe's without the money, are you going to get a shake?
Maybe.
If you had the karma, and I'm not kidding, and I'm not exaggerating, You could walk into a restaurant in the East Village. The waitress would come up to you after the meal. You'd say, please give me the check. And she'd say, I would never think of charging Bhaji Yogini for a meal. You know, it's not my right. And that would be presumptuous for me to charge Bhaji Yogini. If you'd like to pay, you can pay. If not, it's all right. It's not impossible. It happens. It happens. Okay. It's not impossible. You must collect the causes to have that projection. It's a really cool projection. Okay. It does wonders for your credit card. You know? Okay. Seriously. Not possible. Not impossible. Why? Because the food and the restaurant and the waitress and the bill are all empty. Okay. They're just raw data. They can be chewable objects or pens or a Buddha paradise, and it will happen to you if you do it. If you collect the right causes, if you act smart, and if you have the right worldview, hopefully this worldview, we really, if you get it tonight what I'm saying, you get what the world would be like if we all lived like that. You know, you get what would happen. No one would hurt anybody ever, because it's stupid, because you can't get anything that way. Okay, it doesn't work. It's dysfunctional. And people would just start, would that be weird? You know, being compassionate towards each other all the time and helping each other all the time and giving each other shakes all the time. I mean, aside from being the way to get to Buddha paradise, societally it's the best way, right? Even if there's no such thing as karma, it'd be the sweetest way to live. But in fact, it does cause you to reach a Buddha paradise. Master Shantideva calls it a blissful path to bliss. It's more fun and it makes you a Buddha. And it's correct view. And that's the only correct view. You have to help others. You have to give to others. And that's what creates shakes. That's why Nagarjuna said, Shen Lei Min, things are not caused by the things you think. You're wrong. You don't get across town because you got a taxi. Got it? You don't get across town because you got a taxi. Prove it. Lots of people get into a taxi and never make it across town. Okay? I'm not kidding. I'm really not kidding. Your ignorance grasps to a taxi as self-existent. Your ignorance thinks that that's the way you got across town. It ain't the way you got across town. You got across town if you wanted to get across town because you helped someone in the past get somewhere. Period. Okay. Is it some kind of magic? No. It's an imprint planted in your mind. When you saw yourself help somebody get somewhere, what's the nature of a taxi going across town in your perception, in your projections? It's your karma ripening as a taxi ride across town. Okay? How do you want to make sure you can get across town? Help other people get somewhere. Okay. Well, how can you prove that getting across town is not because I got a taxi? Because lots of people die before they get across town. Okay. If getting a taxi were how you got across town, you would always get across town when you got a taxi. Even science says that. If something is the cause of something else, given the same conditions, it should always work. And it doesn't. So stop doing that. Stop thinking that. Stop fighting someone else for the taxi. Seriously, what would the world be like? What would America be like? It'd be cool. And everyone would get a taxi. Yeah. It's really profound. It's deep. It's very deep. Shen Lei Min, these three words, very profound. That's correct view. You have to change your life to live that way. If you don't do it before you die, you will die. You have to change it now. Okay. It doesn't work. Did you notice? How long have you been alive? Are you happy? Did you get the things you want? That worldview sucks. It doesn't work. I mean, get it. It doesn't work, okay? It's dysfunctional. It's amazing people still hang on to it. Okay. Yeah.
So, certainly prove that dollar doesn't force the shape.
Yeah.
But how do you prove that karma makes dollar force the shape?
No, difficult. You study emptiness in the ninth chapter of Master Shantideva's book. Seriously, you start from something like a pen, and you explain it clearly to someone. And you explain the theory, you know, that if you did certain things, you would be seeing this blue and white cylinder as a pen. And then what you should do is say, prove it. And then I'd say, here's a list of exercises called the six perfections. You practice them, or bodhisattva vows, 64 bodhisattva vows. You take any one of them and you practice it seriously for a year or something, or 6 months, and see if you get a result or not. And then there's that famous guy that came up to Master Shantideva in the patience chapter and said, "Oh, I gave away $5 and nothing happened, you know." And and he says, "Come on, I'm talking an extended, serious practice of one of the perfections. Pick any one you want. If you're sick of irritating people in your life, take the perfection of patience and make it perfect. Really seriously practice it for a year. And you will see that irritating, there will be fewer irritating people in New York." Okay? Really, it works. It really does work. The thing I described about the waitress is not a story. It happens. Okay? I never saw it happen. Right. Get it? You come out to lunch with that person, you're not going to see anything. The waitress will probably add some more things on the bill that you didn't even eat. You know? I'm not kidding. This is how reality really works. The rest is a mistake. How do you know? You're suffering. It doesn't work. Okay? Your life is not working. Okay? You're getting old, and things fall apart. Every time you get something nice, something screws it up. That's wrong view. Okay. Believing that the money caused the shake, or believing that the taxi is what got you across town, is based in the belief that things are self-existent. It's based in a basic, mistaken idea of every detail of your world. Okay. Thinking that that's why things work is a huge mistake, because it's based on a misperception of reality. Okay. Now, I'm saying you can try it. That's a different thing. I say try it. It works. Just try it. By the way, I can stand up here and say anything I want. You know, I can say this. The waitress said that to me 2 weeks ago. You know, and that's not going to prove jack shit for you. Okay. You want to know if it works, and you shouldn't accept it. And if you're a good Buddhist, you won't accept it until you've confirmed it yourself. And once you've confirmed it yourself, you don't need Michael Roach up here to tell it to you. And that's the bottom line, isn't it? I mean, the proof is in the pudding. Try it. Try it. You know, take any one of the perfections and do them seriously. Take some bodhisattva vows and follow them strictly. Keep your book and see what happens. If you don't keep your book, and if your practice is half-hearted, and if you're not learning about things properly so you can do them the right way, don't blame Buddhism. You're just not doing it. Okay? And there are many people who fit into that category. You know, they heard this all and they say, I'll start my book tomorrow or next week, you know. Or I didn't have time to meditate today. Or I didn't have time to check my vows today. And of course you're not getting any result. Believe me, you won't get any result. You will live exactly the way you lived in the past. You will suffer exactly the way you did in the past. No change. Okay? That I can say for sure. I can prove that. They'll probably call me to your funeral, you know. Could you do some things for this guy? It's too late. You got a lot to go tonight. You have getting home late, Karma, I think. Say Nile Mayan Gime Nin. Nile Mayan, Ni means two, both. Le means comes from then. Mayim, it's not. I'll say it in plain English, okay? If things don't come for no reason at all, just from themselves, and if things don't come self-existently from something else, then how could they ever come from both of those things at once? Okay? So the third thing, the third possibility, is that the things that happen to you either cause themselves, I'm sorry, both cause themselves and were caused by something else at the same time. But we just proved both of those wrong separately, so there's no way they could be true together. Okay? things don't come from themselves, and things are not caused by something else. So how could they be from both? And that's number three. They can't be from both. They can't come from both. Number four is Gyume Min. Gyume Min means, and they don't come from nothing at all. Don't give me that. They don't come from nothing at all. So I'll give you the four possibilities in plain English. Okay. This is the diamond, the sliver of diamond. Okay. This is the first of the five famous proofs of emptiness. Okay. Everything inside you and everything outside of you that does anything, that works. Okay. This is the, when you're debating, this is the chichen, okay? What are we talking about? We're talking about everything in the world that does something. Okay? That has to be the first part of your proof. Let's talk about everything in the world that does anything. Taxi cabs, money, hammers, bosses, anything. They're empty. Why? Because they don't come from themselves. One. And they don't come from something else. Two. And they don't come from both. Three. Three is they don't come from both themselves and something else. And four is, and they don't come from nothing at all. Come on. Now generally, if I said to you, consider a watermelon. It doesn't come from itself. It doesn't come from something other than itself. It doesn't come from both. And it doesn't come without a cause. You should say to me, you're crazy because number, something is true. Two is true. It does come from something else. What? A watermelon seed. Okay? I'll say it again. If I come up to you and say, I am a great Madhyamika philosopher, consider a watermelon. It does not come from itself. It does not come from something else. It does not come from both. It does not come from neither. You say, you're crazy. Why? Number two, come on, it does come from a seed. But does a watermelon come from a seed? You see? If you have a watermelon that fills your belly, is it because it came from a watermelon seed? No. What really happened? You fed someone else. Why? Seeds don't always produce watermelon. If the seed were the ultimate cause of the watermelon and you're filling your belly with the watermelon, it would always have to work. But there's lots of farmers. I have paid thousands, tens of thousands of dollars of debt of Sarame Monastery that had lots of corn seed that didn't work. Okay? It didn't work. Okay? It did not produce corn. It failed. Okay? Corn seed doesn't produce corn independently. There has to be your karma. Okay? It has to be. But when we deny that it comes from something else, we're talking about, we deny that it comes from a self-existent seed. A seed which is going to behave the same way whether I have good karma in my pocket or bad karma in my pocket. Okay? That's a self-existent seed. I'll say it again. Things do not come from self-existent seeds. What's a self-existent seed like? It always behaves the same whether I, Michael Roach, have good karma or bad karma. It always makes corn. It's not true. If you don't have the karma, it won't make the corn. If you do have the karma, you get a corn crop, and Europeans will be very interested in your sacred dance, and the monks will come back with $80,000. Okay? On top of the corn. You see what I mean? It's not the corn seed. It's the karma. Okay. You have to think like that. You have to start thinking like that. If a seed works, it's because of your karma. If a seed doesn't work, it's because of your karma. It's not coming from the seed. Okay. If you want a good corn crop, take care of other people. Okay. We'll stop there for about 5-10 minutes, okay? Number two to you, okay? because we're running a little short on time, and I don't want to blow you out. Number two, why is it more difficult to understand the emptiness of causation than the general emptiness of ourselves and our parts, which was already presented in the text, okay? And the answer is, it would require us to understand that the very way in which things work in the world is completely different than what we have always thought. You know, you always thought that if you wanted a milkshake, you should go make enough money for it or grub it off your friends. But in reality, the real cause of a milkshake is taking care of someone else who needs a milkshake. Why? Because it's infallible. It always works. You always get a milkshake if you take care of what other people need to drink. Okay? Period. It's not like money. Money works half the time, it doesn't work some of the time. Work works half the time, and work don't work half the time, and you know that. Lots of hardworking people are poor, and lots of lazy bums are rich. Okay? That's why. It doesn't depend on that. Okay? But understanding that is very difficult because you're not used to it. Okay? So that's the... all events and objects are caused only by a shift in our projections and not by some external, self-existent causes like what you call money. Okay? Yeah? Sounds like what?
It sounds a bit like the way that does work.
He says the way it sounds like it does work sounds like self-existent. Self-existent, don't forget, self-existent means not a projection. In fact, now that you brought it up, we're going to get to it right now. The famous gotcha. You've been waiting for Gakta. Most wanted man after Mr. Karma. Say Gakta. Gakta.
Gakta.
Don't forget that emptiness means a lack of something. Never forget that. You know, there are schools of Tibetan Buddhism which say that emptiness means that some kind of glowing light in your mind. Master Nagarjuna, Chandrakirti, His Holiness the First Dalai Lama, His Holiness the 14th Dalai Lama, Jetsun Kapa, Ken Rinpoche, Pabongo Rinpoche, they all say bullshit. You know? Why? Emptiness is a lack of something. It's an absence of something. It's not some golden light in your brain that you're trying to identify. Okay? That's a positive thing. Emptiness is a negative thing. Emptiness is the fact that something is not there. Okay? What is the something that's not there? Gakcha. Okay? Gakcha. Gakcha means the thing that we deny. The thing that all Madhyamika and all studies of emptiness say does not exist. Okay? Gakcha is the thing which we deny with Madhyamika.
Yeah. And it's not nothingness.
Right.
And the direct perception of emptiness isn't the direct perception of
nothing.
Dependence.
Right, it's not.
What is experience?
We'll talk about it. We'll distinguish between dependent origination and emptiness, and that will help you. Okay. Okay, so gotcha is the thing that we are trying to prove doesn't exist. Never did exist, never will exist, never could exist. It's not there. If you want a perfect example and your homework asks you for one, you can put a two-headed, purple, full-sized elephant rampaging through the cafeteria of the Quaker house. Okay? Why? It never could exist. It never will exist. It doesn't exist now. Don't forget, emptiness is the absence of a thing that never existed in the first place. So why are we talking about something that never existed, never could exist, never will exist? Because you spend your life chasing after that thing. And you die because of it. And you suffer because of it. What is it? It's a taxi cab that could get you across town. It's money that could buy you a milkshake. It does not exist. Things don't work that way. Okay? You want a gacha? Money. You want a gacha? A taxi cab. Are they there? Of course they're there. Do they cause a milkshake? No way. You've got to get used to that. If you can identify the thing that was never there and never will be there, it's money that always gets you a strawberry protein shake from Michael and Zoe. That's a self-existent thing. And you live in that world, don't you? You know, you spend your life suffering because it doesn't work. Okay? Forget this God idea that doesn't work. That's cruel enough to tell somebody, pray to this guy that doesn't exist and he'll give you help that never existed. Okay? That's bad enough. But you have a worse one. It's called capitalism. It's called science. It's, you work hard, you spend your life sweating for this green paper, and if you take it to Michael and Zoe's, you'll always get a milkshake. But it don't work that way. And you suffer, and you die. Maybe you die on the way with money in your pocket. You know? Really? Seriously? It doesn't work. Okay? It doesn't work. That's a self-existent object. You know, people think they have to think real hard to think of a self-existent object. When you want to think of a self-existent thing, the gacha, the two-headed, purple, full-sized elephant that never could have rampaged through the cafeteria of the Quaker house, you think of the money that you think you're using to get the milkshake with, because that ain't where the milkshake came from. There's no such money as that. Is there green paper in your pocket? Yes. Does it function to get a milkshake? Yes, but only if you have the karma for it too. Okay. Money without the karma to get you a milkshake don't get you a milkshake, and you know that. Lots of people with money in their pocket die, or they get to Michael and Zoe's 5 minutes after they close, and they don't get a milkshake. Seriously, I'm not kidding. And that's why you suffer. That's why you suffer. You want milkshakes on time? Give them to other people on time. Okay? You don't need money. You might get one anyway. Okay. That's gacha. You don't have to go so far. Gacha is a thing which could exist without being a group of parts that we are forced by our past karma to see in a certain way. Okay? That's gacha. A group of parts. A group of parts. I'm going to go slow. A group of parts. You can call it the change in your pocket. Okay? A group of parts like the coins in your pocket. That you and the guy from Michael and Zoe's both conceptualize as the money to get the thing. Okay? Why? Because they're forced by their past karma to see it as enough money to pay for a milkshake. And you're forced by your past karma to see it as enough money to pay for a milkshake. And since you both agree, it works to get you a milkshake. But is it because of the money? No. It's because of the conception in their mind and the conception in your mind. And where did they come from? You gave somebody help in the past. Okay. What's a gacha? Anything that could exist without being our projection forced on us by our past karma. Okay? I'll give you the Tibetan for that. That's a two-headed purple elephant that never existed. And if you chase after it, you will die first. And doesn't everybody so far? Okay. This is it. I didn't set this up, okay? It just came. No joke. Okay. Sorry? This dogpa means a conception, and the other tokpa means a realization. When you debate in the monastery and somebody says tokpa, you say, which one? You know, you go, you draw the saw on the palm of your hand, and if the guy doesn't ask, you can really catch him. If you spell the tok with a sa secondary suffix, it means a totally different word. Realize as opposed to think. Big difference. Yeah. Okay, say tope.
Tope.
Tengdu,
Tokpe,
Taktam,
Mayimba.
Okay, Tsopa means the collection of the parts, all the parts together. Tsopa, all the parts together. What parts? Cylinder, white, and blue. To make it simple, okay? Cylinder, white, and blue. All the parts together. Tengdu means on top of that, onto that. Tokpa, you conceptualize or you impose the idea of what? A pen. If you're a human, I caught you being biased again. You forgot to remember those dogs. You should have said, which realm are you talking about, please? Okay? Animal realm, it's just as naturally a chewable object. Okay? There's nothing inherently pen about this. Don't be so biased. Okay? Then to tope taksam. Taksam means just conceived of in that way. Just conceived of in that way. Nothing more. What do we have so far? I'll put it into plain English. English. This is a collection of parts which I'm thinking of in a certain way. Forced to do so by my past karma. Okay, I'll say it again. This is a collection of parts and I'm thinking of them in a certain way. Forced to do so by my past karma. If my past karma was medium, rare, I'm imposing the idea of pen on this thing. If my past karma was lousy, I'm thinking of it as a chewable object. And I've got four legs instead of two. Because I'm thinking of those things as legs. Okay? Forced to by my past karma. Now you find me something in the world that's not that way. I'll give you an assignment, okay? It's after your meditation assignment, okay? You find me something in the world that's not that way. You find me any object in the world which is not just a bunch of parts that I'm forced to see in a certain way because of my past karma. You find me something like that. If you do, you just found the gakcha. Because there ain't no such thing. Never was, never will be, never could be. Mayimba. Mayimba means not like that. Not like what? It's not just me thinking of these parts in a certain way. Is there such a thing? No. Can you imagine such a thing? Yes. Is your imagination the real thing? No. Can you imagine a two-headed purple, full-sized elephant rampaging through this room? Yeah. Could it? No. Don't forget to distinguish between... You can imagine a self-existent thing. But in reality, there's no such thing. Okay? What would a self-existent pen be like? It is a pen from its own side. Any being that walked in this room on four legs or two would see it as a pen. But that's not the way it is. Find me any object in the world that is not just a bunch of raw data that you're thinking of in a certain way because of your past karma, and you found me a self-existent object. Thanks. I've been waiting for one. Okay. There is no such thing. The fact that there is no such thing is called emptiness. Please. Okay. Okay. The fact that there's no such thing like that is emptiness. Not some glowing, beautiful pink light in your mind. Okay? That doesn't do anything for you. Okay? The fact that there's nothing in the world which is anything until I think of it in a certain way forced by my karma to do so has profound implications. I can get free Michael and Zoe protein shakes for the rest of eternity. Seriously. And ain't that what we want, you see? I mean, I'm not talking shakes, but... They can be there too, but Cheerios has got to be there. Okay. Okay, anyway, you get the point. Seeing your mind as a pink light doesn't do you anything. If anything in the world is only my projection of my mind forced on me by my sweet past karma or my lousy past karma, then there's profound implications. Then I can enter a tantric paradise in this life. I don't have to die. Okay. Seriously. That's why you came to this class. You want to learn that. You can do that. Could I do it without getting rid of my mental afflictions? Could you, like, give me an exemption or something? Sorry. No. Could I do it without keeping my vows properly? Sorry. It's keeping your vows properly that's what does it. Who said so? Lord Buddha, okay? Well, how do I keep them? Watch them all throughout the day. Every 2 hours, stop your ass wherever you are and check them. How many? Do one, okay? That's hard enough. Okay, if you keep that up over each day 6 times, you could call it, well, Tunduk or something like that, you know? And you might even require people who wanted to get enlightened in this lifetime to do it. Let's make it a requirement called Tunduk for people who want to get enlightened in this lifetime, okay? And it works. It really works, okay? Tunduk don't do anything if it's not Tunduk. Okay. If you don't check 6 times a day, nothing happens. Okay. Yeah.
So God judge, the thing you asked us to challenge us to find.
Yeah.
Something that's not a collection of.
Right. And the fact that that thing don't exist anywhere is the meaning of emptiness. That's emptiness. By the way, how many gotchas in your life? The money in your pocket. The way you think of the money in your pocket is wrong. It does not bring you the things you want. Okay? Why? Incomplete and dysfunctional. Okay? It doesn't work all the time, and it doesn't make you happy. It just doesn't work. It's an illusion. It's not true. Okay? Money is not what gets you the things you want. It doesn't work. I know some of the wealthiest people in the world. They're profoundly unhappy. It doesn't work, you know? You know, yeah. I'm sorry, say again. What is ultimate reality? Yeah, it is emptiness. Same thing. Ultimate reality and emptiness are absolutely synonyms. They're absolutely the same thing. The fact that there isn't anything in the world that is not a projection caused by your past karma is emptiness, and that's ultimate reality. Now, You got me an easy way to get into my next subject easily, okay? It's Master Shantideva who brings up the idea of the Gakcha. He brings up the idea of a two-headed purple elephant that never could have existed anyway. Why? It's very interesting. When I understand people in this room, just now, during the last hour, you perceived emptiness. You did perceive emptiness. Everyone in this room, if you weren't asleep, okay, you got some deeper appreciation of the meaning of emptiness. In a way, you perceived emptiness during the last hour. You really did. Honestly, you did. Okay. Did you see emptiness directly in a deep state of meditation? No. Did you perceive it intellectually in a normal, everyday state of mind? Yes. When you were focusing on what I said, when I said, imagine something that's not a projection, and you were trying to imagine it, and you came up with zero, did you perceive emptiness in a way? Mm-hmm. Yes, not directly, but you did perceive it in a way. Okay, got it? At that moment, was the emptiness you were perceiving, were you thinking of it as self-existent or not?
Yes.
You had to be. That's very interesting. Got it? You actually were understanding emptiness, but while you were focusing on it, you were misunderstanding its reality completely. You were thinking it was self-existent. You were thinking that was not a projection. Got it? The human mind, until you see emptiness directly, cannot see emptiness without thinking it's self-existent. So in a way, you're making a mistake while you're perceiving the truth. You're understanding the truth and you're misperceiving it at the same time. You understand what I meant when I talked about emptiness,
But while you were thinking about it, again you were making your same old mistake of thinking it was self-existent. Okay? And the non-Buddhists come up to Master Shantideva in a very sneaky way and say, so I guess emptiness doesn't exist. And he says, why do you say that? And they say, well, this gacha thing, when you see there's no such thing in the world, you think you see some kind of emptiness, right? Master Shantideva says, right, you do. But even while you're perceiving it, you're thinking it's self-existent, right? Yes, that's true. So really you're not perceiving anything. Wrong. Okay? Got it? I'll say it again. You are misunderstanding emptiness while you're thinking about it. While you're thinking about emptiness, you're actually thinking that it's self-existent. So it's true you're mistaken about emptiness, but it's not true that emptiness itself is self-existent. It looks to be self-existent to you at that moment, but it's not true that it is.
But not at the moment.
At that moment, intellectual understanding. Yeah. I'll say it again. At the moment that you are understanding emptiness intellectually, you are still believing in self-existence. Is it self-existent at that moment? No. It just looks self-existent at that moment. What's wrong with it being self-existent at that moment? Hey, stupid, two-headed, purple elephant, get it? It wouldn't even be there. Okay? Very subtle. So if on your homework, this is how I get people to pay attention. This is why the homework exists, actually. If on your homework it said, why did Master Shantideva get into the gacha at this point? He was answering that question. What was the question? Somebody came up and said, if you understand emptiness intellectually, aren't you at the same moment believing that it's self-existent? That it's not a projection of your mind. And Master Shantideva says fearlessly, right. So they say, oh, well, is the emptiness you're perceiving then self-existent? Because if it is, it doesn't even exist, and you Buddhists are crazy. And Master Shantideva says, look, it's true that I'm not seeing it the right way at that moment, but that doesn't mean it's the way that I think I see it. Because I also agree that if it was self-existent, it wouldn't exist at all. But it's no problem for me, Master Shantideva, to say that when I'm a baby Buddhist, in class number 12, and I'm trying to understand emptiness, and I got some fuzzy idea about it, and at the same time I'm seeing it as self-existent, it still works for me. I'm still getting closer to enlightenment. There's no problem with that. Okay, I'm seeing it a little bit wrong. I'm seeing it as self-existent. But that doesn't mean it is self-existent. That doesn't mean it doesn't exist. That doesn't mean Buddhists are crazy. Okay, that's their attempt to defeat the Buddhists. It boils down to this. Get it? Is emptiness itself empty?
Yeah.
Is emptiness itself a projection? Yes. Okay. Why? Hey, everything's a projection. Even emptiness? Right. Okay. Get it? It's the question, if everything's empty, isn't emptiness empty? And he says, you're right. And they say, well, does everybody understand emptiness is empty? They say, no, when you're just a baby in Buddhism class, you think it's still self-existent. Well, then doesn't it not exist like your two-headed purple elephant? No, it's just the guy's not mature enough in his thinking yet, and he's seeing it as self-existent, and later on he won't. And, well, then how can it help him? He's not even understanding it. He is understanding it with a wrong perception. That's no problem. Okay? It's no problem to get across town in a taxi whose existence you totally misunderstand. Okay? Does it work for making yourself into a Buddha in this life? No. Does it work for getting across town? Well, most of the time. It's an incomplete and unfulfilling way to get across town. Seriously, okay? That's the question of the emptiness of emptiness. And luckily you brought up that question, because I wasn't sure how we'd get to that. Okay. By the way, that's why Master Shantideva gets onto the subject of the gacha here. Why? Because gacha comes up in the context of understanding emptiness intellectually. Okay? Think about it. Does money cause a Michael and Zoe shape? No. Is there a kind of money that I used to think did? Yes. What was it like? Oh, it was like green paper, you know? But it had this inherent ability to get me a Michael and Zoe shape, you know? Well, doesn't it? No. Why not? Sometimes they're out of strawberries. The money didn't change its nature. If it was self-existently potent money, it should always get me a milkshake, whether or not there's any strawberries there, because it's the cause of the milkshake. Okay. That kind of money does not exist. Money that could do its shtick without your good karma is useless. You'll die like Howard Hughes with your own hospital floor. 30 doctors attending you, you know. And the money doesn't work. Because money doesn't work. Karma works. Money imbued with karma works, and money without the karma don't work. Money doesn't cause happiness. Money doesn't cause prosperity. It's like that. It's obvious. Okay. Yeah, yeah.
You always talk about the taxi car that functions. So, if you always talk about the taxi that functions to crush your legs, so don't we have to say it functions to crush your legs if you have the karma?
Right, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. It's your karma that crushes your legs in the form of a taxi cab. How's that? Yeah.
So, it sounds like, every time you say karma, though, it sounds like the karma itself is just...
Yeah, it's very tricky. It's very tricky. It does begin to sound like the karma itself would be self-existent. If it were self-existent, we could never change our karma. For example, we could never do purification. You know, every person in this room, I mean, if I started to describe the odds against us, you'd get depressed, okay? I mean, you have about 100 negative thoughts for each positive thought during the day. The odds are almost impossible that you could have the waitress come up and say what she said. So there must be a way to purify that karma, and there is. That proves the karma is not self-existent. You see what I mean? It can be changed. It can be short-circuited. It can be diffused. And even though it's still there, it doesn't work anymore. And that's what you want to do with your old bad karma. Okay? Yeah?
I think the question, yeah, I think I understood that you could change the karma, but the concept of karma itself seems to be discussed as self-existent.
Yeah, if the concept of karma itself, if the principle of karma was self-existent, then everybody would be attracted to it equally. You see what I mean? If it were self-existently true, no one would misunderstand it, and everyone would follow it. You see what I mean? It's also a projection. If you happen to be having that projection, you will become a Buddha in this lifetime. Okay? But that's not, it's not necessarily the case. It's also empty. Okay, we got to move on a bit. Ooh, we're getting into it. Okay. There's a line in Master Shantideva where he explains the importance of understanding the gacha. What's that? And I thought you might like to... We have to memorize it in the monastery. It's like a mantra. It is the most important line of all from the Bodhisattva Charavatara. And I thought you should see it. I thought you should learn it. Well, do the first line, I'll give you the second line. After I have my self-existent shape. Okay, back to the first line. This, just read it, it's like holy, holy words, okay? Takpe,
Lula,
Marekpar, Dei, Lume, Zinmayin. Okay, Takpe, Lula. Takpe ngu means the thing you thought was there. The thing you thought was there. Marek par means until you can identify it. Okay? Until you can identify it. So this line means until you can identify the thing you thought was there. Like what? Like self-existent money that always gets you a Michael and Zoe shake. Self-existent money that's the cause of the shake.
money that gets you a milkshake. Okay? We can say, example, okay? Money that gets you a milkshake. You thought that's what got you the milkshake, right? Money that gets you a milkshake. What's the ontological status of money that gets you a milkshake? How much does money that gets you a milkshake exist? Not a bit. Okay, get used to it. Money that gets you a milkshake doesn't exist. Period. It is a two-headed, purple, full-sized elephant rampaging through the Quaker House cafeteria. I'll say it again. Money that gets you a milkshake and a two-headed, full-sized purple elephant rampaging through this cafeteria at this moment have exactly the same existence, which is zero. Get used to it. Okay. You want to get milkshakes? There's only one currency. It's good karma. Okay. It always works. It's the cause of milkshakes. No milkshake was ever drunk in the world but that somebody collected some good karma. Who? The drinker, please. Okay? Seriously. It was not caused by money. Get used to it. Okay? What Mrs. Melvin said was wrong. And the New York Times was mistaken. Okay? Prove it. It don't work. You're no happier than people were 1,000 years ago thinking the same thoughts. They don't work. Okay? They don't work for human beings. If a viewpoint doesn't work for human beings, you should just dump it. If there's an alternative that works all the time, prove it. No, you prove it. Try it. Okay? It really does work. Okay? It's really cool. You can live without any money at all, actually. Okay. Deity. Mume. Zimayin. By the way, the existence of money in your pocket and having the karma for that money to be able to buy a milkshake are closely related. Okay? If you have the karma to have that money be recognized as worth a milkshake, you probably have the karma to have that money in your pocket. You see what I mean? It's not a mistake that they seem to cause each other. A person who has one most often has the other, but not always. You see? They're both caused by good karma. That's why the world thinks that money causes a milkshake. Okay, but that's a very subtle thing. Okay, deingume means the fact that it doesn't even exist. In this case, the fact that it doesn't even exist, zimayin, you cannot recognize it. What's he saying? I'll put it in simple terms. Until the day you identify the thing that you thought was there, you will never be able to realize that it doesn't even exist. What it? Money that causes milkshakes. You believe it. You really believe it. You walk out of here and you put that money in your hand and you walk towards Michael and Zoe and tell me you don't believe that this is the cause of a milkshake. You do, and it's wrong. You have in your hand nothing. There's nothing in your hand. Okay? What do you mean nothing? Use those 7-point analysis, please. Okay? Why? Why did you bring up that 7-point analysis? I didn't even get what you were talking about when you were talking about it. You check some money in your hand to see if it self-existently will get you a milkshake. You check the money in your hand and see if without your karma and without the guy making the milkshakes or selling the milkshakes karma, forcing him to see it as worth a milkshake and forcing you to see it as worth a milkshake, you see if that money works otherwise. You see if the money, independent of anybody thinking of it as worth a milkshake, will ever get you a milkshake. Which is to say, go take some wampum to Michael and Zoe's, okay, and offer it for a milkshake. Okay? And see if that guy has the karma to perceive it as worth a milkshake. And he won't. Does that mean it's impossible to think of that as worth a milkshake? Forget it. The island on which Michael and Zoe's is sitting was bought with wampum. Seriously. Because somebody thought, somebody had the karma to see that as worth an island called Manhattan. You know what I mean? Of course it's only in your mind. Of course it's only a projection. Okay, you go find me some money that's not a projection. What? Oh, let's take wampum. And you go offer it for Michael and Zoe's milkshake and see if it works. It doesn't work. Well, how do you get a Michael and Zoe's milkshake? Give some away. Okay? Keep giving them away. And you won't be able to stop the money coming. Your main problem then will be to account for it to your sponsors. You know, because it's too much. Now you don't have time to account for it. You know, and just come. And property and stuff like that, if that's what you want, you know. Yeah. Say again, I didn't catch it.
Some pottery examples, like a diamond, they cannot be cut by any other materials. That's bad. I mean, the money is losing them.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, the fact that a diamond is so hard, I'll ask you, Jay, you tell me first. Does it make you happy or sad? Because if you're talking about what was it caused by, I need to know good karma, bad karma. You tell me, was it caused, does it make you happy or sad or neutral?
You just talk about the same person.
Well, it happens to work for you. I mean, like, they can't make car engines except for the fact that the diamonds can sharpen the carbide steel that can cut the steel to make car engines. You can't make car engines without diamonds. Okay? So let's say it works for you. It helps you. In that case, the fact that they're so hard is a projection that is occurring for you and about 3 billion other people. No, communally. Because you help someone get somewhere or something. Okay? That's all. Okay. This is Master Shantideva's famous lines where he starts to say, look, you have to know why we keep talking about, when we say emptiness, we mean something isn't there that you thought was there. When you reach into your pocket at Michael and Zoe's and you forgot your money at home, you experience the emptiness of money. You know, you're like, you know, and there's nothing there. Something you expected to be there was not there. So you said, my pocket is empty. In the same way, you thought there was a thing called money that bought milkshakes. The day you learn that that is a two-headed purple elephant, you'll be really close to seeing emptiness. You see what I mean? Because emptiness is the lack of that thing. You know, you don't have to go like 1,000 miles to Asia to find the gacha. The gacha is in your own pocket. Don't ever forget it. Money, which self-existently could get you a milkshake. Forget it. Don't even say self-existently. Money that causes your milkshakes doesn't exist. It's karma that causes your milkshakes. If you didn't have money in your pocket, could you still get a milkshake? I don't know. Okay, last thing. I'm going to give you the next of the five great reasonings for emptiness, okay? And it's called yeah.
Is it second or third?
Did I have three yet? I think I only had two.
Gacha
was just a separate subject that came up because somebody attacked Master Shantideva and said. Okay, yeah, it was a tangent. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Okay, proof number two. Say Tendale.
Tendale.
Dependent origination. Okay. I hate that word. It's too long. Dependent origination. Oh, things happen because things depend on other things. How's that? Things happen because things depend on other things. That is the second great proof for the truth of emptiness. To understand this one, I think you have to understand what dependent origination means. So this gets in, this is sort of an answer to your question, okay? Different schools of Buddhism have different ideas about what dependent origination means. Okay, three different ideas about what does dependent origination mean. By the way, dependent origination is the way that things really happen. You see what I mean? dependent origination is the way things really happen. For example, dependent origination is responsible for you getting a Michael and Zoe shake. Okay? If you could find a Michael and Zoe shake that didn't come from dependent origination, you would have located a gotcha. And it would exist just as much as a two-headed, purple, full-sized elephant that never did exist, could exist, or will exist. Okay? I'll say it again. If you could find anything in the world that was not running or not created by dependent origination, then you would find a self-existent thing, a gotcha. Okay? And for some reason, believing in that gotcha and living by that gotcha has caused us all our suffering. Even the fact that we have to die is caused by believing in that gotcha. So it's very important that we identify it. Okay, it's very important that we see what the opposite of it is. Okay, it's a life and death thing. We're not just having fun here. It's a life and death question. If you don't get it in this class, you will very likely die in a normal way. Okay, if you do get it, your odds are good. Why? Because the correct perception, because it's true, will always overcome the incorrect perception. You see what I mean? The truth stands on two legs, the lie stands on one. They used to say that when I was a kid. You know, dependent origination and emptiness and morality and compassion are going to win the world. It's just a matter of time. Why? Every time they come up against some crappy worldview like science or voodoo or Western civilization's idea so far, they're going to win. Why? They work. People try them and they work. So they give up the other one. Okay? Why didn't it get here yet? What took it so long? Your karma. Okay, the karma of our forefathers. Okay? Seriously. Alright? We had to go through that Buddha period called, you know, science and... Seriously. And those ideas which don't work. They didn't make people happy up to now. Okay? Okay, anyway. Gyu. Dang. Kenla. Tene. Drupa. Gyu means causes. For example, a seed. Dang means an. Ken means conditions. For example, fertilizer, sunlight, water, careful tending of a gardener. La means upon. Ten means to depend. Tene dupa means they exist because they depend. Okay. So here's the first idea of what dependent origination means. Things exist because they depend on their causes and their conditions. Things exist. Things like trees exist because they depend on their causes, like seeds, and the other conditions, like water, fertilizer, sunlight, a good gardener, etc. Okay? Who believes this? When I was growing up, they had the Untouchables, Eliot Ness. Yeah. Sounds like the functionalist. I don't know if you remember, but we met them at the beginning of this class, and they were the lower three schools of Buddhism in ancient India. What were those? First, the Abhidharma schools. Secondly, the logic schools, called sutrists. And then thirdly, the mind-only school. All these guys lumped together believe that this is the ultimate meaning of dependent origination. Things depend on their causes. And this you've heard over and over again from people teaching Buddhism. They oftentimes never get past this one. Okay. Oh, dependent origination means things come from their causes. Okay. How am I supposed to improve my life? Oh, just understand that it comes from its causes. Yeah, but... Oh, never mind. We'll go on to the next one. Okay. So say rangi?
Rangi.
Chashe?
Chashe.
La?
La.
Tene?
Tene.
Tupa?
Tupa.
Okay. Rangi chashe means its parts. And the rest is the same, okay? It exists because it depends on its parts. Okay, I'll say it again. It exists because it depends on its parts. I once read a Harvard doctoral thesis on Tibetan Buddhism. And it explained that if we only understood that things depend on their parts, we could overcome our mental afflictions. And then it went on to give the example of desire for a woman, improper desire for a woman. And it said if you could only see her as a bunch of parts, you would, everything would be all right, you know. So I tried it, you know, and I said, oh, look, hair, eyes, arms, legs, just a bunch of parts. It didn't help me at all, okay? This is a lower school, okay? This is called the independent group. These are ideas of what dependent origination is. Okay. They're supposed to help you get out of samsara, get out of suffering. But the lower two don't work very well by themselves. Okay. Independent middle ways. Okay. It's the lower half of the middle way group, Majjhimika. By the way, they criticize number one. And that's on your homework. Okay? Why is number two better than number one? Because there's lots of stuff in the world that doesn't have any causes. But it's still dependent origination. Okay? The guys who say number one is what dependent origination means. The guys who say number one explains the world are leaving out a lot of stuff. What? All the things that don't have causes. Well, how many things are there like that? Oh, how about emptiness to start with? Okay? That doesn't explain dependent origination of all those things that don't have causes. It's a very incomplete explanation of dependent origination. Number one is incomplete. And the guys who like number two complain to the guys who like number one, and they say, come on, it doesn't cover everything. What's number three? And then we'll stop. Ooh, that's long. By the way, I congratulate you that you survived this long, and you might as well just finish, okay? Was it two more classes, okay? So, but it's really good. It was a hard one. It was a hard course. I think that's the hardest one. Say, Tsokpe. Tengdu. Tope. Taksam. La. Tene. Tupa. Tsokpa means all the parts together. All the parts together. The collection of the parts. Tengdu means on top of that thing. We already had this, by the way, tonight. On top of that thing. Tokpe Takpa means you think of it a certain way. What? You take the blue and the white and the cylinder and you lay on it, you impose on it pen. The idea of pen. Okay. Forced to do so by your past karma. Okay? You can't by willpower look at this blue and white cylinder and say, this is the magic wand of immortality. Can somebody in the universe see it that way? Yes. Who? Tantric deities. Can you see it that way? Later. Okay? Well, why can't I see it that way now? Just think of it that way. No, it's what your past karma is calling the shots. Don't forget that. Okay? You must collect the right karma. That's why you have to keep your vows. Okay? Hang on. Taktsam means nothing more than that. And that's how things exist. They depend on you thinking of parts in a certain way. And that's the ultimate meaning of dependent origination. Okay? I'll say it again. The ultimate meaning of dependent origination. Is that things exist because they depend on you looking at the parts and thinking of them in a certain way because your karma is forcing you to do it that way. You're looking at the parts, you're thinking of them a certain way because your karma is forcing you to do so. If you, by the way, that's highest middle way school. That's called the necessity school. I'll ask you a question. Last thing. If you're a monk who's trying to do the right thing with your vows towards ladies, and some guy comes up to you, he's number two school, school number two here, and he says, just think of her as a bunch of atoms and you'll be okay. You like try, you know. He says, doesn't work, you know. And then, if you were in school number three, what would you say to the guy? Think of this person as...
You see it that way.
Yeah. As a projection of your past karma. And that's why you're seeing this thing as a beautiful, lovely thing. Okay? What's that supposed to do for you? And it's just explaining why you see it as a beautiful, lovely thing. It's not telling you... It's not explaining why you should act correctly towards it or anything like that. Or is it? Yeah, if you like to see beauty, then keep your vows. Okay? What's the best way to get good-looking girls? I wish I'd known this in high school. When I could have used it. You know. What's the best way? Keep your morality. Okay? Keep your... Strictly avoid adultery. You know, strictly avoid looking at another person's spouse or partner. Strictly. And you won't be able to stop them. You know? Seriously. Okay? That's where it's coming from. The projection is coming from keeping your sexual, keeping away from sexual misconduct perfectly. And then you'll be seeing them all over the place. Okay. Seriously. We should publish that somewhere. Okay? Seriously. Okay? Seriously. All right? That's where it's coming from. That's exactly where it's coming from. Okay? Yeah. Well, you're asking me, do the parts and the projection come from, both come from... You're asking me, I mean, Jay, what you're saying is, I think the projection might be independently origination, but are the parts independently originating? I mean, is the raw data self-existent? Do you want the raw data to be self-existent? No. It's nothing self-existent. Ah, good question. He says, if that's the case, then what's wrong with the mind-only school? We love what the mind-only school says about that. Okay? Maybe you didn't hear that part. We love what the mind-only school says about that. The only thing they get wrong is that they think there's some seventh part of your mind where all that stuff is staying, and that's not true. But the rest is fantastic. Okay? All right. Last question. I'll read it to you on your homework. I think this is the whole punchline. Number 8. What would be a good way to describe the object we deny in the sliver of diamond? Remember the sliver of diamond? The sliver of diamond said that things aren't caused by what you thought they were caused by. Okay? Things were not caused by what you spent your whole life thinking they were caused by. And that's why you're suffering. What's the gotcha in the sliver of diamond? What's a good self-existent two-headed purple elephant, never could exist, never did exist, never will exist, causes you all of your suffering? One example. I'll say it again. Give me any self-existent thing that caused another thing. I mean,
there is
good. There ain't any. Dr. Tasungdo, what would it be like if it did exist?
All the time.
That's a very nice answer. I mean, very, very cool. It is very cool. I mean, in Tibetan, they joke in the debate ground. They say, oh, you want to know how long a rabbit's horn is? 10, 12 inches probably. Okay. No, but imagine that a rabbit did have horns. I mean, you wouldn't say 30 feet, right? I mean, it would have to be about... I mean, you can imagine what they would be like, right? Seriously. But he's right. You see, I'm asking you to describe something that never existed, never will exist. When the guy gives that first attack on our wrong idea about what makes other things happen, what's he attacking? What's the gotcha? It's money that you could take to Michael and Zoe's and would always get you a milkshake. It's money that causes a milkshake. I don't mind if you put that. Okay? Because that isn't what causes a milkshake. Money which causes a Michael and Zoe milkshake doesn't even exist. Get used to it. You are living in a world of illusion. You are struggling to fill your pocket up with something that doesn't even exist. Okay? Is there this green paper in your pocket? Yes. When you take it to Michael Zoe's and flash it at the guy, do you get a milkshake? Sometimes. Most of the time. Is it the cause of the milkshake? Not at all. Okay? Your pocket is full of non-existent money that gets you milkshakes. It does not get you milkshakes. Giving away milkshakes gives you milkshakes. Okay? Got it. Yes. Here. Have a milkshake. Okay, we'll do it, okay. Sashi Bhagi Jashi Metta Jam Vira Vinci Nyande Yampadi Sange Shindu Mitte Uwagi
This is the end of Class 8. You have been listening to A Guide to the Bodhisattva Way of Life, Part 3, with Geshe Michael Roach, presented by the Asian Classics Institute. The Asian Classics Institute is dedicated to preserving the pure teachings and practice of Buddhism. For a listing of other topics available, write to the Asian Classics Institute, P.O. Box 20373, New York, New York, 10009, or call 212-475-7752.